Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Wednesday afternoon. And, of course, Game 7 in Cleveland tonight. But we have our very own world champion in the studio with us this afternoon, Terry Savage from terrysavage.com. You can read her in Tribune newspapers and see her on Channel 9 and here on the radio and just about everywhere else, Huffington Post. Welcome.
I'm glad to be here today.
You ever lose track where you're supposed to be?
No, I always want to be with you. You're like a magnet. This is the most fun thing I do because you know, we get to talk.
I know, and I do enjoy it. Okay, so the Dow is down, what, about 40 points today?
Right, gold is up.
Gold is up.
20 points.
What about the crude? Now, crude oil wouldn't be impacted by this pipeline.
No, that's a supply and demand market. But I actually think it's pretty interesting. The Dow has done nothing. We're right on an S&P 500 trend line if you're a chartist. And gold, without anything else going on in the world, you know, is going up. It's up over $1,300 an ounce for the first time in about a month. I mean, we're not having some massive gold rally, but I think something out there is telling you that there are some nervous hands in both the stock market and the global financial
and
markets.
They're not baseball fans, those nervous hands.
Yeah, exactly. Is it just a delight to be able to stop thinking about elections and think about baseball?
It's fun. Okay, so is this an election reaction, a pre-election sort of hedge?
I think this is a little bit of a hedge, yeah. But that's not the most important thing I want to talk about.
I know, but let's do one more thing then.
Okay.
The Fed's meeting and they're wrapping up.
Right.
And
it's just
words. There ever a possibility that they would raise interest rates?
Well, certainly not given
the FBI,
the election and the FBI and B, the fact that the Cubs might win the World Series. They do not want to be drowned out. No, there was never a serious thought that they would do it right before the election. However, they will they won't have a press conference. They'll issue a statement and everybody will be looking at the words. We had some interesting economic news out today. The jobs numbers, which presaged the unemployment report
right.
on Friday, those were relatively weak. And so, we've had some good economic numbers from the manufacturing sector, some good news about auto sales, some good news about incomes, but on the other hand, we've had some weak employment numbers. So my bet is, along with 70% of the economists, by the way, I'm not a lone star out here, that they will raise rates a bit in December.
So, I was joking a little bit about the FBI, and I really don't want to get into that here. But we have talked about this coming into this meeting, this very meeting, the idea that the Fed would be unlikely to act because they wanted
to
stay out of the election.
Right.
Right. And so that's sort of that we've had that debate about the FBI, and here's the Fed. In the same situation. Well, it's not the same situation, but they're trying to stay out of the
election. It's a possibility of impacting the election. Be interesting to see. I think the great discussion is going to be after the election, depending on the results, not only at the presidential level, but in Congress, what the Fed how that might impact either whether the Fed acts or more likely how much they move rates.
Right. Do you think there's any way we could extend the election season one more week? Because it's going to be
so much fun, right?
What are we going to do when it's over?
Oh, we're going to celebrate a World Series.
We're going to all be filling out our open enrollment forms. My company, Tribune Media, I just got notification yesterday. And, we just talked a couple weeks ago about how make a resolve to spend the time to do it correctly. And so I did that for about 30 seconds yesterday. And you're like, I'm done. Yeah,
okay. So there's three categories of people out there. We talked a week ago about seniors who have to deal with Part D, the drug plans. Right now, everybody who's an employee should stop moaning about a 5% increase in your premiums because you're lucky you have the wonderful insurance you have, which is better than people who are in Obamacare. So if you work for a company, this is the time to look over the various options and say, maybe I want to take a high deductible plan. Maybe they offer me a health savings, different from flex spending, where I can take a high deductible plan, and if we don't use it, we'll just roll that over. That's corporate.
Tell me, because you talked about a couple weeks ago the difference between co-payments and co-insurance, and I saw the word co-insurance on my forms, which I hadn't seen before.
Well, because it used to be that you made a set co-payment for a doctor's visit or a prescription, but now as some things get more expensive and prices ratchet up, some plans, we're not talking about Obamacare yet, have changed the way they're structured to say a percentage of the amount that this service or this visit costs you, you will pay. And it looks like a small amount, so you think, huh? But when those services get to be very expensive,
right,
you could have a lot bigger out-of-pocket. The businesses and insurance companies are obviously trying to cover the losses on those those expenses.
Okay, I derailed you a little bit. Seniors.
Okay, seniors.
Corporate insurance.
You work for a company. Look at what they're offering, because you might get a chance to sign up for a high deductible plan with a health savings account. Lets you keep growing money for future expenses. But the real big thing facing millions of Americans is Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, ACA. I'm going to call it Obamacare. Now, in a minute. So if you are working in an office and your boss is in the other room, I want you to bring the boss, bring her back into this room, because I am going to show you something even I didn't know about until this morning. So I haven't written it up yet. It'll be at terrysavage.com by tonight. A way for small businesses to get the best insurance policies, the ones that all these big corporations give, where you choose your doctor and get the best hospitals at no cost to the business. But let me leave that aside for a moment, okay, and tell you that if you're one of the 10 million people that bought an Obamacare ACA policy, you are in shock. First of all, you can't force insurance companies to keep offering policies at a loss, and they were told to accept everyone, cover all pre-existing conditions, and that these were the appropriate prices. So many companies just dropped out, or they dropped the best hospitals and your doctors out of the plans they offer. So, and they raised premiums. And it's been a real shock. And you can't avoid buying a policy because the penalties have gone up this year to $695 for an individual and half of that for each child. And it can be expensive to wait until you get sick because you're going to pay the penalty. And they say, well, you get subsidies. But the subsidies phase out very quickly for an individual making over $47,000. So these policies have high deductibles. They may have co-payments or co-insurance, so you might want to get into that in detail. But it's very expensive now to buy into Obamacare, and many people don't want the policies because they don't have their doctors and hospitals in them.
We'll take a break.
I have an answer.
I know you do, but I want you to respond to this because I get accused of being a Clinton or a Obama apologist sometimes. You said 8 million. You said 10 million. I've heard 8 million of people who would have to, but let's say 10 million.
Yeah, okay. Right?
There are going to be 200 million people vote in the presidential election next Tuesday. So the 8 million number is, it's rough.
Well,
it's unfair.
Let me finish.
Okay. It's not fair. We need to fix it. We need to change it. But it is a small, relatively small percentage of us as a country to, the administration says 83% of those 8 million get subsidies that will offset that increase. So that's true or not, that's there too. The other, I just want to say, you know, and I've talked about this before, I had big surgery this summer, and I would be uncoverable anywhere else.
I agree.
I know. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just making the point that we don't often look, so there's the minority of people who are being punished by this, and that's not fair, but there are a great majority of people who are benefiting from it too, and I just want to keep that balance when we talk
about this year. The benefits they get are not what they wanted. They're very skimpy and very costly. Your favorite doctor that, you know, did your heart surgery, it might not be in a plan if you have to re-up in Obamacare. But I have two choices.
And the bad things are very bad. I just feel sometimes we don't talk about the good too. That's all. 1224, it's the Business Lunch. Terry Savage is here on 720 WGN, and we're talking about Obamacare and ways around the insurance and things like that. You have talked about that short-term policy,
okay,
right?
Okay, here are two ways around the Obamacare dilemma. All people won't qualify. The first is short-term, one-year health insurance policies. This is the last year you'll be able to get this deal. The government's now made them a maximum of 90 days, but if you sign up before year end, you can get a one-year short-term health insurance policy. Will be less expensive, although you would still pay the penalty. It could still be less expensive. And if you're healthy and qualify for a short-term one-year plan, you could take that and you will get to choose your doctors. I've put up a website in this column at terrysavage.com, Agile Health Insurance, A-G-I-L-E, healthinsurance.com, specialize in these one-year plans. But not everybody qualifies. Okay. Here's number two, and I haven't written this up yet because I'm just working on it.
And she is so excited about number two.
I'm really fired up about this today. I didn't even know about it. Thanks to Alan Wishner of FlexibleBenefit.com, who I've worked with before. He's a wholesale broker. He works with your corporate policies. And I'm going to give you a place to go at the end of this. Small businesses have a something called a special enrollment program because Obamacare says people must buy insurance, but it didn't say small businesses must offer health insurance. And most small businesses don't because it's expensive to the business. What I'm about to show you is a small business health insurance plan for an existing business, requires only two employees and only one has to sign up for it. It costs the business owner absolutely nothing. During this special enrollment period, you can sign up as a small business, offer it to your employees. If they're better off with a subsidy under Obamacare, let them go get an exchange policy. If you're the boss and you're the only one that signs up for it, it's okay. Policies offered by Blue Cross, Humana, United, group insurance policies, the same ones they offer to these big companies, they must by law offer them to any qualifying small business, at least two employees on the payroll. Not only that, the person who buys the insurance has a payroll deduction, so it's a pre-tax payment.
Nice.
And the employer doesn't have to contribute a penny.
Okay, where do people find this?
Okay, in Chicago, but this is all over the country. I'm working on this column. It'll go up tonight. But in Chicago, I asked, where could you go right now? Here's a website, The Health Insurance Shop, SHOPPE.com. The Health Insurance Shop, SHOPPE.com. If you are a small business owner, two employees, now your other employee doesn't have to take it. You could be paying them the minimum wage, but you opt in, you pay on a pre-tax basis. It doesn't cost the business anything. And it's a, I didn't know about it. It's a way to get a great policy, the kind that lets you choose your doctors and covers all the major hospitals here, just what's falling off of Obamacare. If you're a business, now
so
you can
So this is in
this.
Chicago. This is a local one, but
this
you can do
this. This is a local one. Let me finish writing the column. Yeah. I just started talking about this. If you can contact your insurance broker. If you're a small company, they have health insurance brokers. They all know about it. It's a small business group plan, requires only two employees. Only one has to take the policy. The business pays nothing. You pay the premium pre-tax, and you get the best policies from all these major insurers.
Okay, check that out. The Health Insurance Shop.
The Health Insurance Shop, SHOPPE.com, if you want to go do it today. Or call your insurance broker.
Check out TerrySavage.com. You'll have that column up.
I'm going to put that up this evening.
And send it to me, and I'll tweet it out and link it as well.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
Terry, nice to see you. We'll see you again next week.
Good to be with
you. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're in the Showcase Studio right along Michigan Avenue, and some days the views are better than others. This is kind of one of the gloomy ones. Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business is on a phone line. And, Frank, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it, first of all.
Yes, thanks for having me, as always.
And second of all, I just have to tell everyone who's listening that if you want added entertainment value to your to your Cub game tonight, you should follow at Frank Sennett on Twitter, because honest to God, I was missing the game. I was having so much fun following your tweets.
Well, thank you, sir. It's at Sennett Report. So, yeah.
At Sennett Reports. Okay, we'll search Frank Sennett. And so if you had been the manager, we might have had Chapman a little bit more rested for tonight.
That's right. I just about had a stroke last night, and I think that feeling was shared by a lot of it turned out.
There were a lot of people. So just I want to, you know, fill out the picture for me a little bit. Are you sitting on a couch just tweeting like mad, or how does all this work?
Yeah, I'm sitting on a couch, you know, having a Diet Coke, trying not to, you know, melt into a puddle on the floor. And, you know, the question is going to be, as everybody knows, if Chapman comes in tonight, does he give up the game-winning homer to the Indians? And if not, then, you know, Madden's a genius, as always.
Well, but, you know, I think he's – I'm going to give him credit for having been a genius for 175 games or whatever it's been so far. So I think I'll be okay. I don't know.
There you go.
But really, there was one point during the over the weekend, I think, when I'm not kidding you, I'm reading your tweets and I missed a big play on the game. So there's that. That's my suggestion.
Well, thanks, Steve.
People are interested. Well, let's talk Cubs a little bit. So I actually have a buddy who is in a car right now driving to Cleveland. He's got a ticket for Game 7 tonight. I would imagine that the prices have been skyrocketing.
Okay, it's my hero. Yeah, I checked not too long ago, and the standing room only tickets on StubHub were going for $800. So you want to go?
Hey, that's not too bad, is it?
Yeah, so the prices really jumped, though, during the game last night. So if you had gone on before the game, you could have gotten, you know, some bargain prices. But when the Cubs went up 3-0 after the first inning, the average resale price jumped 17% to $2,100. And then at the end of the second, another 20% to $2,500. And then it was $2,700 for a ticket was the average price after Addy's Grand Slam. So you can kind of watch it almost like a stock ticker of a stock on opening day.
And there's a very interesting reason why those numbers kept going up. It's because it wasn't Cleveland fans trying to buy tickets.
Yeah, 54% of the traffic to the SeatGeek ticket page for Game 7 came from the state of Illinois, compared with just 11% from Ohio. So we want it more, clearly.
And the metro areas, you break it down that way, Chicago was 53% of the traffic on the site, Cleveland only 7%. That's pretty amazing to me because, obviously, people who are in Chicago buying those tickets also have to travel and get there within 24 hours, whereas the people in Cleveland are just driving across the street pretty much.
Yeah, and for me, it was probably more wishful thinking. I mean, I think a lot of us were checking, like, well, gosh, how could I figure this out? I looked at also some travel options, and it seemed like almost all the flights to Cleveland today are sold out.
Really? Well, you know, but what is it, an 8-hour drive?
Yeah, so what the heck? We start now.
It's very scenic. You go under the underbelly of Lake Michigan, and you pop out in Cleveland. Who wouldn't? And so you could be wearing some Cubs gear as well, right? The sales of Cubs paraphernalia has just, what is it, like 500% of the average team or something like that?
Yeah, so 5.2 times the average merchandise sale of any team in baseball. The Cubs are the hottest selling sports team in baseball for merchandise, according to Danny Ecker at Crane's. I found this from Slice Intelligence. It's a San Francisco-based e-commerce research firm. They looked at sales for MLB's official online store from April through October, and also Dick's Sporting Goods, Old Navy, you know, places like that, and they found that Cubs gear is just in hot demand.
And
before the World Series.
And Danny said that the sales online are up 118% from last year, which means that all along Cubs sales have got to be pretty good for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Cubs, because of the WGN connection, have been a very strong regional team on radio and very strong national team on TV for many decades. And those of us who grew up outside the city often became Cubs fans.
So Slice reporting that the 2015 World Series champion Royals sold 1.9 times the league average in merchandise. The Mets National League team 3.4. So the Cubs really, I mean, dwarfing those numbers.
Yeah, they're kind of off the charts. Like, you know, it's kind of like a Schwarber home run. It's off the charts, man.
Okay, so if you had to buy, or not had to buy, if you were going to buy a jersey, a Cubs jersey, who would you buy?
Just given, you know, I'm my body type, I think the only thing I could get away with would be a Schwarber, maybe a Rizzo.
You could be actually confused for Kyle Schwarber, I think, if you're wearing that jersey.
Yeah, you know, I got the little bristly goatee and everything, so a little Brillo pad. No, I don't have that, but I don't think I could get away with a Chris Bryant. I'm not in the boy band. I just don't look that dreamy.
Or
how about you? What would you wear?
I would. I'm an Addison Russell guy, and I've often been confused for Addison Russell walking up and down Michigan Avenue. So.
You did go for Halloween as a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle.
I love that story. At DNA Info, they had pictures of the Cubs, the variety of Cubs who stayed home to trick-or-treat with their families. And Addison was a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle. Is that, that's what it was, right?
That's right. Everything about Addy. I mean, what a great story. That Grand Slam was just a thing of beauty.
And we talk about, well, and so was that driving double he had in the first inning. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. That's the bloop double.
But let's give Madden a little more credit, or maybe go up higher, too. I'm not sure. The fact that, you know, the Cubs, after Game 5, didn't jump on a plane and fly straight to Cleveland. They stayed here and trick-or-treated. And I just think that speaks to the mental approach that Madden has set for this team, and I just think it pays off.
Yeah, I don't love some of his in-game decisions, but I think where he excels as a manager is by nurturing that young team and creating a tight-knit group and really being supportive, and I think that that's no small thing. I think that he deserves a lot of credit for that,
I agree. It is no small thing, and especially, you know, we've seen these guys need to be convinced that they can hit the ball as well as they can. And I just think fostering the mental attitude that you see in the dugout, you just see him smiling and laughing. I think that works a lot. My parents drove up from the big city of Manteno yesterday just to walk around Wrigley Field, just to be there and be part of it all. It was tough to find a place to park because the street restrictions are still in effect. But there was a local business that said, yeah, just put your flashers on. I'll tell the coppers that you're visiting. But the street restrictions remain, right?
Yeah, this is the craziness of Chicago parking. They're extending the parking bans for Cubs games through Friday. And I don't know if anybody told the city, there's no game on Friday.
There's
not even a game on Thursday.
That's just to sweep the people up who fell asleep in the curb. That's what that's for, Frank.
That's right, and a little partying at the 5 a.m. bars.
All right, listen, enjoy your Diet Coke and your Twitter machine tonight. The whole world will be watching.
Unless we can get the standing room tickets after this second.
All right, yeah, we'll do it. You drive?
Yeah, I'll bet.
That's Frank Sand at Crane Chicago Business. You can read more about this at chicagobusiness.com. Thanks, pal. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
I have a second here. I want to tell you, I've talked a couple of times about this, and we haven't really put up the formal ads like I think we will soon, but just a little heads up if you want to jump the gun. Sharon and I, my wife and I, are going to lead a WGN tour to Iceland next June. Now, the scenery there is spectacular. I've been looking at some of the sites on the itinerary. The waterfalls will blow your mind. The geysers, all of that. We'll jump in the Blue Lagoon if you want. This is one of the WGN trips that we do. The groups always gel. We have a great time. You'll come home with lifelong friends. And if you want to be part of that, we'll start advertising it soon formally, but it might fill up before then. So there's information at SteveBertrandTravel.com. Also, you can find it at WGNRadio.com. Or just give me a call, 847-606-6065. We're going to leave June 2nd. I think it's an 8 or 9 day tour. It's $4,200, and that includes almost everything. So if Iceland is on your bucket list, check that out, SteveBertrandTravel.com. And we'll hold a spot for you. We'll check business, traffic, all of that coming up right around the corner on the Business Lunch. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. It's Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Sam Yagan started his first company, Spark Notes, as a Harvard senior. That was in 1999. He sold it a year later for $30 million. Sold his third company, OkCupid, the dating website, for $50 million. He's now the CEO of ShopRunner.com, and he joins us on the Business Lunch. Sam Yagan, welcome to the program. I appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All right, so I'm reading up on you a little bit yesterday, and I see a 15-question thing you answer for CNNMoney.com, and I think the last question was, what keeps you up at night? And the question you posed was, will the Cubs win a World Series in my lifetime? You're going to find out tonight.
Can you believe that?
It's going to happen tonight.
And I hope the answer is yes.
Are you a Chicago boy?
I was born and raised in Chicago, in the Chicago area, and spent about 12 years on the coasts, starting companies and going to school, and then moved back here about 10 years ago and have been committed to trying to build the technology ecosystem here for the last 10 years.
Well, we're talking in part because you're doing an event, I think, in conjunction with Ivy at the I.O. Theater.
That's right.
Tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock tomorrow evening. And one of the things you're going to talk about is how to know when you have a winning idea. Oh, it's a pretty good question. How do you know when you have a winning idea?
Well, I think one of the biggest mistakes that I see people making is first not solving a real problem. Most of the big businesses, the great businesses that have been created have solved a real pain point, a real problem that either a business or a person faces. And that's the single biggest problem I have. So I think you have a business when you're really solving a problem and then when your product actually effectively solves that problem.
So
those are kind of the two things. Identify a big problem and then solve it.
All right. So if you come up with what you think is a billion-dollar idea, but no one's really asking that billion-dollar question, it's not going to do you much good.
Right. Yes. So, solutions in search of problems are almost never good businesses.
And so I guess that goes to my next question then, because how do you find out if you have a bad idea? That's one way. But I would imagine as a serial entrepreneur, you fall in love with ideas from time to time and have to throw them out because they're just not going to work.
Yeah, I think you used a really good phrase there, falling in love with an idea. I think that gets very dangerous. I always like to think that the entrepreneur needs to be his own or her own sharpest critic on those things. Don't buy into it. It's like a baby, right? If you show someone your baby, everyone says it's cute. yeah, that's because that's what they're going to tell right. you. And I think same thing with a business idea. If you tell someone, hey, I'm starting this new thing, people want to support you. They want to tell you what's good about it. They latch on to the most exciting part of that idea. But really what you want is give me all the negative, critical, identify all the challenges now so that way I can decide whether or not to start the company. Don't tell me, 2 years from now after I've invested, all this time and energy and sweat and blood and tears in my business only to find out that there were all these challenges that I could have thought about much earlier.
That raises a question with me. So you're working at venture capital and you've done some work with a couple of companies we talk about quite a lot on this, on the program. Alternative is one, Shift Gig, they've been on the show as well. But the idea of saying, being, harsh and being, here's what's bad about the idea. As you're working in the Midwest in Chicago, do you find that people here, people making pitches or people responding to pitches are maybe to a fault, maybe not, much more polite than they are on the coasts?
No, no? I don't. Okay, good. So I don't think it's a polite. I don't think it's a politeness thing. I think we in Chicago and in the Midwest, we run good businesses, and that usually means while we may do it politely, I think it means that we have a rigor and an analytical honesty to the way we approach things. I think we ask different questions and we value different things in Chicago than people might ask or value on the coasts. But I don't think it's that we're too polite to give people tough feedback. I mean, our political system.
That's certainly true.
Doesn't suggest that.
I had an author friend of mine once who said that he moved here from the coast and he goes, you guys are just much nicer here. And I just wondered if that translated. I want to ask you something about something that you wrote, I think, at Inc.com as well. So as a guy who, even as a college senior, is raising billions of dollars with these great ideas, you wrote in this piece, part of me is like, what's my identity if not the company I'm building? And I just wonder about that. I mean, do you get sometimes so tied up in what you're creating and what's next that you lose track of the rest of your life?
I think I was referring to my professional identity there. I mean, certainly my family comes first, and a lot of the work I do, whether it's on boards or with nonprofits, I think come first. But I have this simple rule. I mean, anybody who knows me knows that I'm almost always wearing a t-shirt or a sweatshirt that has the logo of my company on it. And I do think, especially as an entrepreneur, you are part of your identity is the place you work, the company you've started. This is, in some ways, an extension of who you are. But I think it actually applies more broadly out in business. I think I often challenge people when they ask me for career advice. I say, would you wear the logo of the company that you work for
right.
today? And you'd be surprised how that has been a clarifying question for so many people who say, oh my God, no, I wouldn't. I need to change my job. And so that's just sort of a nice filter. I think, everyone spends so much time at work. If you wouldn't fly the flag or wear the logo, then maybe it's worth reflecting a little bit about, if that's the right place for you.
That's a great point and a great thing to think about. Sam Yeagan, thanks very much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hope we can do it again soon. This is the Business Lunch.
Anytime.
On 720 WGN.